Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org.
Before we start our conversation today, we have a short invitation. As most of you know, this entire podcast is made possible by the generosity of our Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world who give monthly to fuel this dream we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family flourish.
We've already developed a film series entitled Raising Passionate Jesus Followers, which is a step-by-step guide of what it looks like to practice discipleship to Jesus from birth to launch. This offering is available completely free for any church that would like to run it in their church community. Or for a low cost, you can download the content for yourself at home. We have churches running our film series all around the world, and now, because of the generosity of our Legacy Builders, this film series has been translated into Spanish.
We plan to release more film series, specifically on marriage and emotional health, over the next few years, along with new podcasts, long-form courses, books, and more. We are a crowd-funded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday people like you and me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to Legacy Builders with a very large dollar amount, but we now desire to invite a whole new group of people to give $10, $25, or even $30 a month.
Many of you are just like me. You likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music or Spotify, or various other offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional? $5, even $10 a month. Again, our dream is to see people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families around the world. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give. Now, enjoy today's episode. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast.
Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. This is officially our Christmas episode. I don't know if you guys are listening right before Christmas when this comes out or after Christmas. We're going to talk about Christmas, but I really think what we're going to talk about today is really applicable to all areas of our lives. I'm here today with Mom, mm-hmm. and we have Sally Lemos again, which I feel like you are becoming like mm-hmm. our resident contributor, yeah, regular absolutely. Contributor, also our neighbor. So yeah. makes yeah. it incredibly easy, but we're so glad to have you
I
back
love being
on.
With you guys. We love it too. It's such an honor to be with you both.
We yeah. love it too. We've all been talking for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And finally had to just hit record because I feel like we basically recorded the whole episode just talking. So we'll try to see if we can capture it again. But we've just all been struck with this just kind of looming thing that I think we all carry, especially moms. I think dads carry it too, but I think at Christmas, moms carry it more. Mm-hmm. But just these expectations that we have of Christmas, of of ourselves and the atmosphere that we're trying to create, mm-hmm. of our kids' responses and how everybody's going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And we've just been talking a lot, even the last couple of days, about where do these expectations come from? Why do they feel so overpowering mm-hmm. at times and confusing? And yet we uphold them anyway. We do all the traditions. Mm-hmm. We do all the mm-hmm. things. So that's just a little framework of what we're going to talk about today. But Mom, you were sharing just kind of an epiphany you had at Thanksgiving. Why don't you share that story with us?
We're laughing just a minute ago. It's another of Diane's failure stories.
Oh, welcome
I
to the club.
To really yeah. stack those up. So this last Thanksgiving, I hosted at my house, which I love to do that. Our house is kind of an open concept, big, huge kitchen, bigger than I would ever need. And just kind of ideal for having kids and families over. And Brooke and Elizabeth and their family, so six came over. And then in our community group, we have just really great friends. And mm-hmm. also two generations who live right on each other's property. And so these are people I know and love, no pretension. They aren't guests. We didn't dress up. We were wearing jeans and sweaters. And yet I just worked myself into a tizzy over this meal, wanting it to be just so great, just beautiful, delicious, everything done on time. And anybody who knows me that knows that I am, I guess it's very understated to say I'm not a very good manager. I'm not managerial in the way that my mind is made up. And so I really struggled to be able to time anything. And of course, Thanksgiving, we know, is always probably the hardest meal to time. Yeah. Everybody brought stuff. And this big, giant, beautiful turkey would not cook it. And so everything was going cold, and we were finally kind of tearing the turkey apart and putting it on sheet pans to see if it would cook faster. I turned the oven up, which of course dried the turkey out, and it was really a fiasco. Everybody else was having fun, but I was just sweating buckets.
Those turkeys.
And I'm so frustrated with myself that I had not been able to do this beautiful Pinterest-worthy meal.
Which, can I just pause?
Yes.
Turkey is gross anyway. It is. Why are we still making
turkeys for Thanksgiving?
And how many
stories about turkeys not cooking? What is wrong?
No kidding. Or catching on fire. Rebecca has a story about that.
Oh, yeah.
Why do we still do turkey?
Okay, this is the last, I will declare it here, the last turkey I'm ever going
to
cook in my entire life.
Okay, I'm holding you to it. I'm holding you to it.
So I have a wonderful marinade for flank steak. That's what we've transitioned to.
I will share that with you. Because none of us like turkey, and I did buy this big, beautiful turkey, I had also did a brisket. The brisket turned out absolutely fabulous.
Nobody
starved.
You
don't do anything. It's really hard to mess up the brisket. So, but afterwards, me and my hot and sweaty and overwrought self sitting down to the dinner table, beating myself up inside because I could not, after all these years, I still could not come out with this beautiful Thanksgiving meal. But then I got into a conversation with our friend and her husband. And after dinner and everything was all pretty much cleaned up, the guys cleaned up, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. And we had probably at least 2-hour conversation that was so life-giving about things that really matter to us, things that we're really learning, that the Spirit is teaching us way beyond surface. And I sat there realizing days worth of work. And the real highlight, the fun for me was that conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's made me really want to rethink the way I do these kind of things. Mm-hmm. After I got over lambasting myself that I'm not a Martha who can just, you know, make it all click in the kitchen, to the point where I actually sat down with you, Elizabeth, and said, will you please manage the Christmas meals for us? Like, tell me what to get, what to do. Also, for Thanksgiving, I made everything homemade. Mm-hmm. I didn't buy anything from anywhere. I'm just not that kind of person. I don't know why I do this to myself. What? Who I'm trying to impress. And that's probably the bit. It's like myself. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm trying to prove something worthiness to myself. that really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I don't even really care that much about it, but I sure did this Thanksgiving. So that all has got me thinking over the last several weeks. Then I happened to go on Instagram, and I don't do Instagram a lot, but I popped on and Sally's Instagram post. You just started Instagram maybe a couple months ago, right?
She does the Instagram because I can't really figure it out, but I give her content and she makes it look great.
Okay. So, yeah. It looks great.
Yeah.
But the content. So then you had a switch over to your website and you had a post written. Yep. And I'm reading this post thinking, why didn't somebody tell me this 40 years ago when I first started hosting Thanksgivings and Christmases? And it so resonated with me that I wanted to know more. So Elizabeth and I knew we were going to do a podcast for Christmas. So I called her and said, what do you think about seeing if we could have Sally come and teach us more about what she wrote about and really help us, along with a whole lot of other women, be able to go into these family gatherings, especially if we're responsible for them, at rest, quiet in our souls, not all hot and sweaty and upset and lambasting ourselves because it doesn't turn out like we want it to do, or taking out our frustrations on our kids because they don't cooperate, especially at Christmas time. They don't cooperate. So that's kind of the basis for what we're talking about today. My fiasco, my response to it, and then is there a better way?
Well, and I think what resonated in what you wrote, Sally, is you very vulnerably shared your story and your upbringing with your mother.
Yeah.
And how so much of the expectations or the things you do at Christmas to make it, to do all the traditions and feel a certain way have really been driven by things that she did and ways she made you feel, and not necessarily in an entirely positive sense. And just some realizations you've had now that your kids are not little, and now it's, you know, your grown kids coming for Christmas. So I'd love to transition and have you just share some of that, share some of your own story. And I think there was a lot of connection between the two of you and your own stories. And I just, as soon as I had talked to you, Mom, and then read what you wrote, I just thought, gosh, unfortunately, this is more the norm than not.
Yeah.
So how many other families are there out there? Not just moms, although I do think it maybe leans more towards the moms carrying this load, but it's a load that affects the whole family culture. And so to you dads listening, I would encourage you, even after listening to this, ask your wife, like, what are you carrying into Christmas? What weight are you feeling that I'm totally unaware of? Because I know the weight I carry to pull off Christmas, I say, is not the weight that Brooke carries. He very much in a carefree way moves through December and is always behind a week before Christmas, but somehow pulls it off. But there's always tension and I'm annoyed because I'm way ahead of schedule. And so I think it's something that affects the whole family, but I think maybe moms carry more of the load of. So I would love for you, Sally, if you're willing to just share share your story and what you've been reflecting on this Christmas.
So I think mostly what I'm really noticing is I have such a different way of connecting and being present with my grandchildren that there's such a contrast between who I was and how I was as a parent. And obviously as a grandparent, you're different, but there's so much, and a lot of it I know as a I've learned as a therapist that are things that I would have done so very differently with my children. But wanting to be intentional, thinking about, you know, Christmas and the holidays, and our Christmas this year, we've already had one in Idaho, and we had takeout. I mean, it was just like, what was the plan? What were we going to do? And I just wanted it to be simple. I wanted, if everybody wanted to stay in their jammies, whatever worked for my my daughter and her family, but being really intentional about the gifts that we were taking, having things that went with the gifts we were taking, you know, a way of really connecting with each one of those kids. And then coming home and thinking, oh, you know, I love decorating, and I love being in our Christmas house. I love being in our Christmas house with my husband, but then thinking about, you know, some of our traditions with my daughter who's here local and what's that going to be like. and wanting it to be different in a way that I'm connecting with them, not mm-hmm. so caught up in all of the expectations. And so I could feel the expectations. I mean, I could mm-hmm. feel like, here's the list and I got to wrap mm-hmm. this up. And then I got mm-hmm. stuff I got to get in the mail. And just, I mean, I could feel my system just starting. So just trying to slow down and be kind of curious with mm-hmm. what is this about? And then I started thinking about my Christmases as kids and the things that I loved and the things my mother did. And it was fun because we were together, but we weren't really connected. Mm-hmm. We weren't mm-hmm. like, I couldn't see myself in my mom's eyes. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I can see my grandchildren can see themselves mm-hmm. in my eyes.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I mean, it was fun and I knew Santa was coming and we were going to have presents and all of these things, but I didn't feel connected. And then there was stress when my grandparents came because my grandmother was always critiquing my mom mm-hmm. and really very cruel to my mom in so mm-hmm. many ways. Mm-hmm. And all the holiday plans were on my mom mm-hmm. because we were the only grandkids on both sides. Yeah. Both sides. I had a cousin, but for the most part, we were the only grandkids. So everybody came to our house and the tension was just incredible. Mm. Mm. So I started thinking, she had this measuring stick that was her mom. And so where did my measuring stick come from?
Mm. Yeah.
My expectations of what it was supposed to be like.
Yeah.
And it had to be perfect and had to look cute and had to, all of these things that my focus was on making sure everybody liked all the things that I did, but not really being with anyone
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that felt really sad to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you, both of you, I use this quote a lot, the Maya Angelou, the idea that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but they won't forget how you made them feel. And so just mm-hmm. kind of sitting with, how did my kids feel?
Yeah.
At Christmas?
Yeah.
How do I want my grandkids to feel? Yeah. How do I want my kids to feel now?
Yeah.
Was really what just was resonating with me, that mm-hmm. the guilt of not getting it right
yeah.
was so heavy
mm-hmm.
that I was missing all the good stuff. And it wasn't exactly. like I didn't grow up in a Christian home and my kids were young when I became a Christian. I've always wanted Jesus to be part of it. But when that shame and that guilt is so intense for me,
mm-hmm. yep.
He's nowhere on board.
Nowhere.
Mm-hmm. It's a part of me that's trying mm-hmm. to perform so that my kids will think I'm a good mom. I mean, the bottom mm-hmm. line is mm-hmm. I'm scared to death of my kids not thinking I'm a good mom.
Yeah. Mm. Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
And I think, man, it's so profound right there of just how often do we do all the things having no idea why we're doing all the mm-hmm. things, not slowing down enough to peel back the layers, and it's painful at times.
It is.
So I get why we don't all the time.
Yeah.
But to peel back the layers and for you to be able to sit and say, this is what it was like for me as a child. Mm-hmm. That's not actually what I want. Yes, maybe there were things we looked forward to and there was an anticipation, but there was no connection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for you to be able to be aware enough to mourn your own childhood and then even humble enough to mourn what it was like when your kids were little.
Yeah.
But to now say, but I still get to do something different now with my grandkids, with my grown kids. Uh-huh. I get to make it actually feel different, not uh-huh. feel something because it's wow and amazing, but because right. you're actually present.
We're here together.
Yeah. And connected. And I think that's what we kind of want to pick apart a bit of, like, uh-huh. if we have all this pressure and tension and all these expectations mm-hmm. that are just making us stressed, even if we're containing it well, mm-hmm. our kids are so perceptive.
Oh, they feel and it even if we're we not, feel it in our body.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. But the often disconnect between what we feel in our body and all these expectations, whether it's from our family of origin or cultural expectations or perfectionistic tendencies or whatever it might be, versus what we actually want. All of us want to connect with our kids mm-hmm. and for our kids to feel loved and seen
and
heard and valued mm-hmm. apart from the task. But we also have tasks to do. And Christmas to pull off and traditions that our kids count on. And mm-hmm. so just this idea of, I almost just picture this like internal war. I know we're going to talk about Mary and Martha in a minute, but one scripture that that you had brought just to our hearts and minds. I just want to read it. It's 1 John 3:19-20. It says, this is how we know that we belong to the truth and how we set our hearts at rest in his presence. If our hearts condemn us, we know that God is greater than our hearts and he knows everything.
Right.
And I think so much of that wrestling is our hearts condemning us, which distracts us from rest in his presence, like our heart actually resting in his presence.
And I think for me, the slowing down part was recognizing, again, this is kind of the neurology piece, that I had watched my mom year after year after year, and I didn't think about it, but my nervous system absorbed her striving to please her mom. Mm-hmm. And she never did.
No.
So it never, there was never a ceasing or a stop striving. That is just kind of how my system is wired, that the mom does these things.
Yeah.
And then slowing down to like, why am I doing these things?
Yeah.
Are these the things? And what are the things that I love doing that translate to the people in my presence that I have created a space for you to be with me? Mm-hmm. Not, you know, and it's, yeah, I still have, we still buy presents and we still do things, but I don't cook a turkey anymore. Yeah. I have too many of the turkey fiascos that I'm freaking out in the kitchen and I don't really even like the kitchen. And oh my gosh, what are we going to eat?
Yeah.
And, you know, just it's a disaster that we do something different that feels manageable for me now. And I think we started some of those things, but it's like this ongoing, how do people feel when they're with me?
That's exactly
that seems,
it.
And the other piece is, it's not about me. I so want people to see Jesus in me. And when I'm all bunched up, there's no way.
No, or when I was lambasting myself over the turkey fiasco, I was not loving the people around me. I wasn't seeing them. I was seeing too much of myself.
Well, and part of us is that we want to be loved and accepted too. And it's kind of the place where looking at Mary and Martha just on my own in the past few days, I feel curious about, was there something that kept Martha from being with Jesus? I mean, is there something in me that a shame or I'm not enough or I have to be so perfect that keeps me from wanting to be at the feet of Jesus? That's the part that I feel like I'm kind of wrestling with with all of this.
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
I know for me that when I find myself just distracting myself or busying myself with tasks, trying to do all the things and do them all perfectly, it's not even that I'm consciously trying to avoid being with Jesus. Oftentimes it's I'm trying to avoid feeling my anxious feelings.
Yeah.
Because when you slow down, you feel all those things. And I think for me, you know, hearing both of your stories and knowing your upbringing and your family of origin and relationships with your moms, you know, got me reflecting on why do I get stressed out at Christmas? Like why as soon as Thanksgiving is over, I am like, the go button goes on. I drive Brooke crazy. I'm like, it'll be December 1st and I'm stressed out that we're not done Christmas shopping. And it just got me reflecting on, well, where does that come from? Because mom, I don't feel like it's from you at all. I feel like the way I experienced you at Christmas was you were at rest. Maybe not so much Thanksgiving. I think that meal was always kind of overwhelming for you. But Christmas, I just remember you always being at rest. And it's like, it's our family's favorite thing in the world. I mean, Christmas is a big deal in our family. We all just genuinely enjoy it. And so for me, I was reflecting on, you know, as I've shared little bits on here before, I struggle with a lot of chronic illness, and it's been a lot worse the last couple of years. And for me, it's a grief of the capacity I used to have to pull off. I used to love making everything from scratch, healthy versions of everything that actually tasted really good. And I mean, I would cook so much and have the whole thing planned out. And, you know, I would, it was before you ordered everything, I would actually go Christmas shopping and like all. So for me to not do things is a grief. I have to feel the grief of
really
I
loss.
Can't do, you know, and it's it layered is. With my health and kids with disabilities and now having so many kids. And so it's been a journey of like, I often find myself striving to keep things like they used to be before rather accepting the reality of what actually is, which is a huge grief to me.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's been helpful to me. Your guys' sharing your stories has prompted me to recognize that's the tension I feel.
Yeah.
Not because I think my kids expect something of me, not because my husband does, not because I feel any family pressure to make something be, you know, make it be something.
Yeah.
But it's that I'm afraid I'm not going to have enough energy to finish it and that I'm just going to be.
Legitimate fear.
And I've just found myself this year. I have to notice, you know, we talk about this all the time. I have to notice and be curious about why am I so stressed out about wrapping everybody's present? Oh, it's because I'm afraid my back's going to hurt really bad and I'm not going to have enough energy to wrap everybody's presents, you know? But it's been freeing this year to look at it through the lens of good enough and not it has to be amazing. And so just in silly things like, the things I used to make on Christmas morning. Instead, I asked, the whole family really likes cinnamon rolls. But I just asked everybody, what do you want with the cinnamon rolls? And everybody just said, we want the Trader Joe's frozen hash browns and regular scrambled eggs. We don't want a big scramble. We don't want you to make anything else to go with it. We just want it simple.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I can do that. Not like, so really just, I think so often too, we can make so much of it about how we want to feel and forget about how do we want the whole family culture to feel.
I agree.
And not just on Christmas, but like the whole month.
The whole month.
You know?
Yes.
I was.
And the memories that when we look back, do we look back, like I'm looking back at Thanksgiving with a lot of negativity and self-criticism. But Christmas, I want to look back and say, oh, that was really satisfying. I had these conversations that I loved. I was able to communicate well to people who I care about. I think I struggle with needing, for some reason, wanting to prove myself to be more capable than I am on the holidays. And I think a part of that is because my mom was so capable. So incredibly capable. She was like Martha Stewart, you know, homemade and, you know, everything wrapped just so, and the meals all made in advance and very uptight.
Yes.
And
kind of scary.
Wish always was Christmas. You were saying, Sally, you feel like you wish you had been more present to your kids. My wish from my mom was that she'd just been able to be nice. She just was not nice on Christmas. Because when my mom was nice, she was warm and charismatic and funny and genuine. But Christmas was, all that activity didn't bring out the niceness in her. I would have traded, I would have much preferred takeout food to her beautiful meals and then her just, you know, being mean.
And
frustrated all the time. So, I mean, if we could just get that in our heads, I think every little girl and every little boy just wants your attention to be seen by you and you to be nice to them.
Well, and just to be in the moment with them in their little worlds on the inside.
Yeah. And not to have expectations that they're going to respond to every gift you give them with wonder and delight and thanks. I remember being a really shy little girl. And when, even now as an adult, if somebody gives me a gift that is really meaningful to me, and you do this too, Elizabeth, I go really quiet. I'm not jumping up and effusive and hugging. I'm I go real quiet. It's meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. It's not because I don't appreciate it. It's because it stuns me a little bit. It's just, it's an internal processor. Mm-hmm. And our kids, if we're not careful and we're all over them, say thank you to grandma over and over and over again. Maybe we need to give our kids a little bit of permission to just. Number one, they don't have to like every single thing that we thought of to give them. Number two, they don't have to express it. Like, you know, Jude, my oldest grandson, he is a genuine, the most extroverted, affectionate person I think I've ever met.
Very expressive.
Mm-hmm. And whatever you give him, whether he likes it or not, he likes it because you gave it to him. And he's, oh, thank you. It's the best. Big hugs and kisses and... That's what we almost expect even the shyest of kids to do. With Jude, it's no effort. The effort is to tone himself down. But I think we have to be careful with our grandkids who may be like Birdie on Christmas because
not going to want anybody looking at her.
And there are going to be 18 of us. And it's going to be loud and very, very messy and millions of conversations. You cannot expect Birdie to... She'll show her gratitude later by playing with her things, but she will be pretty shut down on Christmas.
Yes, it will be very overwhelming. But you know, it's interesting. Duke was saying, and then Scarlett has mentioned it this year too. We were talking. I was asking him a bunch of questions yesterday, and I was saying, "What's your favorite thing about Comer Christmas? Like, what are you looking forward to?" And he said almost right away. He said, "I love that." We all open our gifts one at a time and everybody gets to see what you got and we can talk about it and everybody's just like really present before we move on to the next person. That's like his favorite thing. Yeah. And it's really true. We had to stop giving each other as many presents because it was taking too long because we go so slow one person at a time.
Yeah.
There's too many of us. But that... I mean, that's from a 14-year-old boy.
Wow.
Who's like, what I love is that it presents.
I love everybody's that you are presence. Asking that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that you're asking
that.
That
is amazing.
Them, what is it that you like about Christmas? What's your favorite thing?
Yeah.
I love that you're...
Well, can I tell the full story I told you both before? Why I was asking him was because we went... We've not done a great job having our kids like buy for each other and be really thoughtful at Christmas.
With the exception of Scarlett,
she's
so generous.
Yes. And she finds so much delight in it. She keeps saying, I see what you've said all these years. It's so much more fun to give than to actually get presents. But we're usually kind of like last minute. Oh yeah, they should buy for each other. That's important. Yeah. But we've been kind of talking to him about it. He's been saving and saving all year. He loves to snowboard. And so he's been saving for his pass for the mountain all year. Yeah. And, but you know, he's 14. He's not had the thought of, I should also save to be generous. It's just not, thought has not crossed his mind. So we'd been talking to him like, you need to take a little bit of the money you saved and we'll get the girls a few things, you know, be thinking about it. And I was all frustrated that it didn't feel like he had been putting a lot of forethought into it. But I took him to Target last night and I'd been wanting to get away with him and just connect with just him. With this many kids, it's really hard to do just one-on-one.
Yeah.
And I'd been feeling like, man, I need to just connect with him and just like have that time. So we're driving there and I'm just kind of irritated out the gate because he hasn't been thinking about this. And I'm spending the whole drive to Target talking to him about the fact that he's going to need a job next summer and that when he saves for his pass next year, he's going to need to think about more than just his pass. By the time we get there, he's like, get off my back, Mom. Like, I mean, he's just, he's frustrated. So I'm like, you know that you have those moments where you know that what you're doing is not what you want to be doing, but you like can't stop yourself.
Yep. How do you land the plane?
Yes. So we get out of the car and I was like, I'm sorry. We do not need to talk about where is going to hire you next summer. And we are going to pray about it. God cares about these things. I'm sorry for stressing you out. We'll talk about that later. Let's go into Target. We go into Target. He's not that into it. I feel like I'm picking presents for his sisters. And I'm all discouraged and like, man, we're really going to have to like teach him thoughtfulness. And then we get to the toy aisle for his younger sisters. Mm. And he knows that they're obsessed with Bluey. Mm. Best show ever.
Best
and we are looking at Bluey toys, and he had planned on just buying them like $10 presents. You know, he had a small budget, and he sees this big $50 Bluey thing, and he just decides he wants to get it for them, that he just knows they'd be delighted. Mm-hmm. And he has this big generous moment, and he buys them this gift. And I'm thinking, gosh, this is who he really is.
Yeah, that was in
this
there.
Is not, yeah. I did not need to be doing that to him our whole time driving to Target, concerned mm-hmm. that he's not going to learn to work hard and set aside enough money. And so I just had to take a minute to just intentionally make a shift of like, no, this is who he really is. Yeah. This is his mm-hmm. character. Yeah. He is generous. He yeah. just is not always going to think about it as quickly. Mm-hmm. And then we just spent the drive home. I was like, I've got 10 minutes of a drive home, and I actually really want to connect with him. Yeah. So I just started asking him questions about what is he looking forward to at Christmas? Who is mm-hmm. he looking forward to seeing? What are his favorite traditions that we do? And mm-hmm. just got to hear from him.
Yeah.
So that's how I asked him the questions about mm-hmm. what do you love about Comer Christmas? But it was after missing it of recognizing I'm using this as a teaching moment. This is a connecting moment.
But I think what happens when we go into that teaching moment, and I think for me, it's similar kind of as I'm reflecting, is I'm noticing something in my child that I feel like I've blown it. Mm. I haven't taught them to mm-hmm. be generous.
That's
enough.
How I felt. Yes, yeah.
So
it was about me.
It's. I have this place that I feel lacking, mm-hmm. but then I feel like I have to, and they're my child, so now I have to fix it, mm-hmm. and then I'm like over.
Yeah.
Rather than just like, okay,
that's exactly what it was.
We're mm-hmm. gonna get there, and then I mean the shift for me, and it's. I mean, my kids are gone, so I'm not in the heat of it like you mm-hmm. are. But to think, I'm noticing this. Let's just see what's inside.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's like I had a conversation with a client who is in the medical field, and his comment was, I just hate it when parents say to their little tiny kids, tell him thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I just say it's okay. I'm just honored that I can take care of you. And what came to mind, because my 5-year-old grandson, we just had this experience. We took him to a concert, and the shuttle bus driver getting off, he's just this sweet little boy, just says, thank you for the ride. Mm. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And he's just like that.
Yeah.
But how do they get like that?
Yeah.
And part of it is if I'm leading by example, by being gracious to the people mm-hmm. around me, they're going to kind of catch that rather than me thinking every moment that I have I have to be depositing mm-hmm. things into them because mm-hmm. I'm the mom and that's my job rather than what's there? Yeah. Let me see what's in there. I see you.
But see, what you said, I so resonate with when you said it so often becomes about what I haven't done, what I haven't taught them.
Yeah.
That's what gets me every time.
This is the first John that you just read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The enemy starts to accuse us and condemn us.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it happens with our kids too, but God's doing it with us.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
God knows what's in our heart.
Mm-hmm.
He knows everything. So we need to shift away from that
mm-hmm.
and shift back to a place of connecting with Jesus. And how do I do this with this? I can't do that mm-hmm. when I am just overwhelmed with guilt and shame that I'm not measuring up.
And that's where I get stuck in parenting so often.
Oh my
Brooke
gosh.
Is the one who's always reminding me. We were just talking in just challenges we're facing with Birdie. And he said, why are you being hard on yourself? You're not supposed to know
how to
parent a non-neurotypical child.
No. Yeah.
Like you've never done this before.
No.
Yeah.
So why do you expect that you're supposed to know how? And I said, it was really good for me to have to think, you're right. I actually don't think I should know how.
Yeah.
I just think I need more tools.
Yeah.
But I was processing it of like, I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing it right. I'm not parenting her well.
And for parents who have kids that are struggling,
mm-hmm.
and there's so many of us. I mean, I had kids that struggled.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say I need help.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you've been so good at that, Elizabeth.
Good at that. You are.
Doing the research, getting the help, saying we need more.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
But can I remind you, Elizabeth, that it is ultimately the Spirit of God who transforms us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And who transforms our kids.
Yes.
So you can nag our kids into great behavior.
Yeah.
And saying thank you, never forgetting to say thank you, and taking their shoes off or do all the polite things.
Mm-hmm.
But it is as we lead them closer and closer to the love that Jesus has for them, that's when he begins. They want to be close to him. And, and he sort of, I think transformation is partly sort of Jesus just rubbing off on us.
Yeah.
He's so.
And that's what I feel like I got to see in Duke last night of like, I was saying all the things and we've been trying to model generosity and all this stuff, but
it happened.
It just happened in a moment where he just got this picture of them being delighted.
Yes.
And he said, like, we're literally looking, he's like, I could do that one. I'm sure they would like that too, but they would love this. Exactly. And he goes, I want a splurge. I'm getting them that one. you know?
I love it.
But I think that I got to see a moment of that, of like, you know, whether you want to call that the spirit in him or, but just a moment of being like Jesus, you know?
And call, and if you can, and if it's appropriate, probably not appropriate for a 14-year-old, but for a 7 or 8-year-old to call that out and to say, that is so like Jesus. Do you realize that's how he is with us? God he's gives so good generous. Gifts to us because he just loves to see us light up with the joy of it.
Yeah.
I feel like we have to be careful about all the behavior modification that makes everybody so uptight.
Yeah.
And it's important. I mean, we want to train. I think we give our kids a huge benefit by training them in people skills and loving intentionally. But far more, as we all of us press into the love of God for our children, or we see God in our children, aspects of him in Duke, in that kind of generosity. Mm-hmm. And it was, and in Duke's case, it's generosity at cost to himself, because I know he's... If he's able to get that lift ticket, it's going to be barely, because he's working really hard to get, I mean.
Well, this is the fun thing, is he knew that by doing that, he didn't have enough money to buy a used pair of snowboard boots. But what he doesn't know is that we found some on Marketplace and he's getting them for Christmas. Okay. So I'm sitting there like, I think God's just going to delight him by the things he actually needs. He doesn't know are coming, you know, the things that he thinks he didn't quite save enough for.
We can't give him.
And yet he showed that sacrificial love for his sisters. That's
So I'm excited for on Christmas to say, hey, look, God knew all along, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, even just having this conversation, it seems like three different women with three different motivations, all of us realizing that we, as you've said several times, Sally, it's really, we want Christmas to honestly be about Jesus with us and our kids feeling the love of God from us to them and the connection, not distant, oh yeah, God loves you, but this distant, we incarnate the love of God to our grandkids and to our teenagers when they're acting a little gnarly, to our husbands when they aren't, you know, maybe helping like we think they ought to help, or whatever the situation is.
I think when we're able to truly see them and be with them and in whatever it is that matters to them, that's how God is with us. He sees us and he's with us in whatever that matters. Our 7-year-old grandson, our boys are just beginning to do a little bit of video game stuff, very short periods of time. And I'm terrible at video games. I'm so terrible at video games. I love to sit and watch and be with them. But our 7-year-old, who is not a patient, flexible, he's a very busy boy. Jaja, I want you to play video games with me.
Oh no.
And it's like he is so patient, but he wants to invite me. And that is the biggest compliment.
It is.
To be invited in to something that matters to him, even if it means he has to slow things down. He wants me in it with him. And so I think that for me is kind of the place of I want to be with them in it in a way that I really am noticing what this is like for them, that they feel like I want her in my world with me.
Exactly.
Just like Jesus, I want Jesus in my world with me. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense.
I can't imagine my grandparents. I mean, I knew my grandparents, but they didn't know me, my hopes and dreams and
Nobody played with me.
Strengths and weaknesses. They were just like these benevolent people that I saw from time to time.
And you had to be, I mean, for me, there was like, dressed the right way and the manners the right way and
Elizabeth could tell you stories.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the Comer side, you didn't get any of that from them, but it wasn't always easy to connect either.
Yeah, but I felt very loved.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe not that they like knew me deeply, but I knew they loved me deeply. Yeah, absolutely. You know? In all the little things that they did and, you know, and they were, Papa especially was like present.
Yeah.
You know, sit on his lap and
So sweet.
Yeah. But, you know, we mentioned Mary and Martha and just, you know, it's so interesting. It can be easy for the story to be about Mary doing something right and Martha doing something wrong. But I think, you know, when I hear about both of them, you recognize both roles were needed.
Yeah.
There was, you know, Martha was practicing hospitality. There was a reason everybody was at their house, you know? And I think of even Christmas, like there is still the reality that practical things have to be done, you
know? Not only have to be, but we do love our family through the food we feed them, the favorites.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I just, this last line when it says, you know, Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset about so many things, but few things are needed or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better. Not that both are, you know, one's bad ones, but one is actually better. And then the last line, and it will not be taken away from her.
Yeah.
Just think about like, yes, all the things that Martha was pouring herself into were needed, but they're fleeting things, you know.
Yeah.
The cinnamon rolls get eaten on Christmas morning and then they're gone.
Yeah.
But the idea that what Mary chose can't be taken away from her, that relational connection, that sitting at Jesus' feet, the presence with him, that is actually lasting.
That is so good.
So our kids are not going to remember, they're going to remember a few things they got for Christmas, but probably because they felt a certain way, because they felt really loved by that. Or they might remember a few meals, but probably because it's what it felt like around the table.
Absolutely.
They're not going to remember all the tasks we did or the bows we put on the wrapping paper, which, by the way, I have no ribbon or bows on any of my wrapping paper this year. And I've just decided to feel totally fine about it.
I
wrote
it.
To and from with a Sharpie on the bottom
because
that's what I had capacity for this year.
Right.
Perfect.
That's right.
And then the girls pulled out like different wrapping paper from the back of our closet and wrapped presents in it. So now we have all sorts of different paper and it's just going to be good enough.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And in a period of time, all of that's going to be on the floor and you're going to be picking
it
up.
100%. It's just annoying to a 5-year-old anyway. Yeah. Somebody has to like cut the ribbon off for her. And,
Yes.
But just kind of as we end, there were just like a couple questions that came to our minds of just how do we be aware of this? How do we not miss this Christmas? Or if you're listening to this after Christmas, you know, I think this applies to just any normal day, a weekend, a birthday celebration, just our day to day with our kids. But the first is maybe asking yourself, what do I want to see happen at Christmas or in my home? Like thinking about that. Yeah. What do you actually want to see happen? I think for most of us, it's not that all of our plans come together just perfectly and everything's perfect.
Right.
That's not usually what we're after. It just can be sometimes what we end up focusing on.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does
a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
And from year to year and age to age, it may be different.
Mm-hmm.
Some years it may be different than others, but I think what we all want ultimately to see happen is our family to connect.
Mm-hmm.
In one way or the other, whether you have toddlers and mm-hmm. babies, teenagers. Now mm-hmm. I have a lot of adults. We're spread out now for the, mm-hmm. you know, we used to be all near each other and we saw each other a lot day to day. But this is a rare time for us all to be together. And so for me, it's just still the same thing. I want mm-hmm. connection. I mm-hmm. want to be able to sit back and watch my children, now adults. We're passing the baton of really faith in Jesus mm-hmm. and a love for Jesus and lives lived into the kingdom. We're passing that on to the next generation. We don't know how many more, you know, we're getting older. And towards the age where our kids now have to take this.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us to be able to make space for our kids to be able to talk when they live 1,000 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I really want. And trying to keep that in mind while I'm doing all the stuff
mm-hmm.
That could distract from that. I heard a woman say recently, she just wanted Christmas to be magical. And I thought,
yeah. You're setting yourself up for disappointment.
You are setting yourself up for disappointment right uh-huh. then and there. Because I don't think the adult kids coming to your house are not thinking, oh, I want Christmas to be magical.
Mm-mm.
They're thinking, I'm tired. I want a good cup of coffee. I want mom to, you know, make it great for
yeah.
me just mm-hmm. as far as comfortable.
Yeah.
And we want, you know, I don't want to be responsible today.
Mm.
And the kids are thinking, yay, I want to be with everybody.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. they want to connect with you.
Yeah.
They want you to be proud of them mm-hmm. for being able to play this video game that you really don't,
mm-hmm.
you're having to learn to care about.
And
right?
I just love that he's just like, Jaja, play with me. Oh, you do it this way, you do it that way. I'm like, what's this button?
Sure, I'll just press a bunch of buttons.
I think for me, just, it feeling good to be together
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. and just like, oh, that was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the food was perfect or that the house looked perfect, but just, I love this. I love being together. Mm-hmm. I love our time together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels safe. It feels good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me too, I think, you know, I've just been reflecting on the fact that I don't have any really little kids anymore. Mm-hmm. And so being together and just having a day like Christmas is much more enjoyable, actually.
Yeah.
It's less work than it used to be.
Yeah.
And it's so fun when they're really little and delightful, but it's still just, it's just a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
And so I'm looking forward to this year of just everybody really will enjoy being all together and mm-hmm. seeing what everybody got. And I'm really looking forward to a slowness mm-hmm. to it, you know,
mm-hmm.
Of just letting the day linger. For so mm-hmm. many years, we didn't get the whole day. We'd be packing up to go to Portland or, mm-hmm. And so it's just so special to get mm-hmm. that time. Mm-hmm. And then Scarlett and I get to lead worship together on Christmas Eve.
That's right.
Oh, that'll be so
which
sweet.
Is just, I said yes to because I get to do it with her. And I just think it's so special. So there's a lot we're saying no to because that will be a full day. But mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to just getting to share that experience with her mm-hmm. and connect with her
mm-hmm.
in so that beautiful. Way. It will be so special.
Yeah, it will beautiful. Be. Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, another question we talked about is how or who do I want to be?
Uh-huh.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one that we have to be really honest about mm-hmm. and really in tune with our capacity, which I know we're going to do an episode on soon.
Uh-huh.
We talked about it at the motherhood retreat, but the minute we go outside of what our capacity is for the season that we're in, we often become or start to operate in a way that's not actually how we want to be. And that makes it impossible to be present. And then that's when so much of our heart begins to condemn us, you know?
Yeah.
And we have to go slow enough to be able to ask the Father, well, how do you want this to be? How do you want me to be? What do I need to do to be able to be the person I want to be and to be connected?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly. And I think going in with that idea, who do I want to be? I want to be warm, not withdrawn. I want to be warm and generous, and I want to pay attention, and I want everybody to have felt like I saw them, that they're loved by me, and that I was enjoying my time.
Yeah.
And in order for me to be that person, I have to let go of the idea of my kitchen looking neat and tidy. It won't.
Someday you're going to let go of real plates and use paper plates, well, like we've been telling you for years and years and years.
Yes. So we Phil and I had this meeting this morning because he is a master at management. And I had asked him, with fear and trembling, I asked him to manage Comer Christmas because he also is very high control.
He likes to take over.
You ask him to manage something and I, you know, he's definitely, is not afraid to be bossy.
Yes.
But he's honestly great at it. So he comes home from running an errand with a big stack of the only paper plates I've ever said, I like those paper plates. Oh. And they're these big oval, you know, thick ones. And I didn't have my cochlear in, so I couldn't hear. So, you know, we do this little funny sign language thing and he's pointing at them and, you know, doing that, you know, oh kind of thing and saying Christmas, you know. Big over enunciating Christmas, and that his fingers are doing that. Oh, and he's pointing at me, does it like four times. Like, I'm getting the impression, I'm getting
we're
the
using
idea
these
to
for Christmas.
Christmas. We're using, because I always say, oh, I like real plates, but then he quite often is the one who ends up loading all those real
and
plates.
Real
and
he, plates.
I don't have 18. Plates.
I was going to say real plates for 18 people for multiple meals for second breakfast that everybody goes and gets. Yes. All we do is wash dishes
day. That's right.
Yeah.
And somehow we're going to have to do this thing where I only have so many glasses too. And, you know, people, they all look the same. So people go in and they get themselves a glass of water and they set it someplace. And then they go get another glass. An hour later, because they don't know where they set it.
You have to get little sleeves that you put plates. People's names on or something.
Yeah, we need to do something like that. Yeah. I feel so guilty doing that. Like that just
but here's
not
the thing,
the right
nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
That, I think, honestly, I think so much of that is your mom. Yes. I think you prefer stuff on a real plate, but I also think your mom did all the china, all the things, all the, but like my memories of going to anything at her house are not
good
ones.
No.
Yeah. No.
I do not want to perpetuate that. And I will, because she's 10 times more capable than I am.
In
so
task.
I will perpetuate it. Yeah. In tasks. Mm-hmm. In tasks.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So hopefully the next podcast we do, you will be able to say, triumph. My mom used paper plates for Christmas.
Yep. I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to hold you to it.
Yeah. But I mean, who do we want to be on Christmas? And that needs to take priority over how we want everything to go smoothly and look and feel magical or not magical. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get 18 Comers in one room and feel magical.
Yeah.
You know, you can have political discussions and
meltdowns.
You know,
somebody always cries.
Yeah. Anytime you have that many people together, it's there will be messy moments. And I think
there will be messy
being
moments.
Prepared.
Fun and interesting, but messy. Yes.
To just be present in the mess.
And lastly, and these all kind of go together, but what kind of culture am I trying to create?
Yeah.
And I think this is where you, with your spouse, with your community, with your kids, I think as your kids get older, this can be a family conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I think even sitting down with your kids and saying, what traditions are really important to you? What makes it really feel like Christmas to you? And they might surprise you with what they say or don't say, things that they don't care about at all.
Yeah.
You know? In that, so we do this, the we read the Christmas story together, which I don't think we've not put on social media this year, but we have on our website, we have full instructions of how to do it, how our family does it.
Because I think it's all of our favorite moment in all of Christmas.
Well, apparently not Duke's.
Not Duke's.
Yes. Apparently he and Moses find it quite boring and just joke around together the whole time. He's like, I know. I should enjoy it. It's the Christmas story. But like everybody has to read and the candles are messy and it takes forever. He goes, so Moses and I just goof off the whole time.
Oh, that's interesting. But also, you know, putting him on the spot for it to require a dyslexic
to read
a portion
is stressful.
It's got to be stressful.
It always used to stress me out. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the sweetest moments of Christmas. Too. So I think too. That and right there, you're not going to make everybody happy and everybody make it feel like it's magical.
And maybe... some traditions don't have to be done forever.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think this is one to press into. Like, what culture am I trying to create? And not even just this year, like year over year. You know, we're looking at the long haul of it.
What does my family need now?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's lighthearted fun and laughter. Sometimes it's serious, being able to really connect at a deeper level.
Yeah.
Sometimes everybody just needs a little bit of space because the world is so noisy. You just want your home to be a little quieter.
Yeah. So as you go into Christmas or whenever you're listening to this, we hope that this is helpful, at least like spurring thoughts in you like it has in us of just, I feel like we all have a lot to think about this Christmas of as we're in process and learning this, you know, we were all just reflecting on as we were even trying to come up with a roadmap for this podcast, like it felt messy because it is messy.
It is messy.
Because relationships are messy.
Yeah.
And I think Christmas especially, it's like this constant moving target as your kids get older and your family needs different things, like you just said. But I think it's so important that we just year after year ask these questions, be willing to ask the questions, be willing to be curious about any angst we feel. Because really, Sally, what you were already explaining of just it, the most important thing is how they actually feel in our presence. And that that starts with us being connected to the Father.
Yes.
And us being at peace in our own nervous system.
How we're feeling.
That His love can just abide in us and flow through us. That's what they're really noticing. And they may not know that that's what they're noticing. Yeah. In the moment, but as they get older, to be able to say there was something about my Jaja or there was something about my grandmother or my mother that was different, that just always felt so good. That's Jesus in me.
Yeah.
That's what I really want for them to notice.
And just want to leave with one last verse that Phil texted over. And, you know, he's always our Bible man and our scripture guy. And I just feel like this is just a phrase, really, that it just so resonates with really kind of sums up everything we're saying. It comes out of 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. Our goal is to stay within the boundaries of God's plan for us this Christmas.